Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to WTIC's Pet Talk. Today, Lori Fast takes your pet behavior questions. This is a show for you and your best friend. Call in now at 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, or star WTIC from your cell phone if you have AT&T Wireless. And now, Pet Talk.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Pet Talk. My name is Lori Fass, and I was here last week. But last week, I had a guest, and we were talking about reptiles and snakes. And that was because I was doing it in honor of the 2025 Chinese New Year of the Snake. But he was a good guest. Kevin liked him. He wants me to get more guests like that. But they're a little hard to find. So you're just stuck with me today. And I have a few things that I wanted to talk about. But in addition, this is a call-in show, so you're welcome to call in, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, or if you have a question, obviously, that I'd like to help you with. And if you want to do that, the numbers are 860-522-WTIC. And if you want to talk to me but not on the air, and you want to get my email address or my business phone number, you can just access me through my website, which is easy to remember. It's LoriFassDogTraining.com. And, you know, I'm pretty easy to find. You know, sometimes I find it funny that people are asking someone else how to get in touch with me. And honestly, if you just Google Lori Fass Dog Trainer, you're probably going to find me that way. I'm definitely not in the witness protection program, and I have enough connections of various things that I've done over the years that I'm pretty easy to Google search and look up. So if you want to do that, you're welcome to do that too. So it's been pretty cold, I'm sure, as you all know, and I had put a hold on doing my dog training group classes during the winter, and one of the reasons was just because I don't like to have to work out on slippery, icy ground. And this winter, the ground actually was pretty good because we got such little snow. But the cold snap we got was pretty bad. And all of the places where I teach dog training groups, which are West Hartford and Windsor right now, do give me inside space because I don't like to have to worry if it's raining or some bad weather event. I have taught classes where I'm just outside and then I don't know if we're going to be doing the class or not if it's really, really bad out. And that's not fun. But typically, you know, winter weather is not great to be outside and it can be slippery and dangerous and that kind of thing. And this winter, if we were having to be outside in the really, really frigid cold, I know some people and some dogs would be able to bundle up, be fine with it, but a lot of people and dogs would not be. So, you know, that's kind of why I do that. And then I also take off group classes in the summer because it's just gotten so tremendously hot. Windsor does have some air conditioning, but it's really not enough for a room full of dogs and people. So anyway, what I'm leading around to in a roundabout way is coming up in March, I will be doing my groups again in Windsor and in West Hartford. And all of that is on my website as far as times. It's both of them are weekend groups. So I have a Saturday in West Hartford and I have a Sunday in Windsor. And they're sponsored by the towns. So you're technically signing up with the town, but you don't have to be a resident of the town to sign up. And if you want any information, you know, certainly reach out, send me an email. I'd be happy to tell you what's up. And I do have links to how you would sign up for those groups if you were to go on my website. So I just wanted to let people know that, you know, I'm coming out of hibernation, or I guess Brian from the reptile place in Enfield said that reptiles brumate, I think he said. So I don't know what I was doing, but whatever it was, you know, laying a little bit low. And of course, I do work with people privately. And if I'm seeing somebody privately, I can come to your home. So we could be inside or outside as you wish. But anyway, just wanted to make that little announcement here. And what I wanted to talk about today is how animals communicate. And I'm feeling a little inspired by this book I recently read. And the name of the book is Why Animals Talk, The New Science of Animal Communication. And it's written by Eric, but spelled with an A, Kirschenbaum. And I think it's an interesting book. I have some things I like about it, some things that I don't necessarily like about it. But he goes over communication of a variety of different animals. He's talking about wolves, dolphins, parrots. He had a specialty in a type of a little furry animal called a hyrax, which I didn't really know what one was, if I'm going to be honest, but it seems like some sort of little cartoon animal of some kind. And he spent a great deal of time studying them. Also gibbons and chimpanzees and that kind of thing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how dogs and cats vocalize and how they communicate, and a little bit about, you know, what Eric Kirschenbaum wrote in his book. But before we get into all of that, I think we maybe need to go to a break, and we'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to WTIC's Pet Talk. That was Pink Floyd with their little musical tribute to their dog, Seamus. Anyway, I thought it was good to play that since I wanted to talk about different vocalizations and sounds that, well, I'm most familiar with dogs and cats, but I recently finished reading a book, which I mentioned earlier, Why Animals Talk, The New Science of Animal Communication by Eric, A-R-I-K, Kirschenbaum. And I mentioned, you know, he highlights a lot of different types of animals, none of them dogs or cats, although he may mention them somewhere in passing in the book. But I think that I'm always interested in other people's experiences with animals that I don't know very much about. Now, I did many years ago do volunteer work at a zoo in Syracuse. And so I had occasion to be around other types of animals. I gave tours and I did demonstrations with animals that were there that could be handled. For example, there was a fox that had been confiscated from somebody because it was illegal to have him as a pet. So I used to take the fox out and handle the fox. And they had ferrets. And of course, people have pet ferrets. I'm not sure exactly why the ferrets were at the zoo in this case, but they were. But even so, you know, those are animals that I know not a lot about. I've spent many, many thousands of hours with dogs and also with cats. And so, you know, I feel like I can speak from firsthand experience when I'm learning about other animals. I like to hear what other people's experiences are. So I think that the book that I'm talking about, Why Animals Talk, had some very interesting ideas and points. But I think my main objection to it is I think he spent an awful lot of time defining what human language is, which includes past tense, present tense, objects of a sentence, and, you know, certain types of language structure that most languages, as far as I know, and I think his point was all languages, all human languages have these sorts of qualities, and animal communications don't have those things. And okay, I'll go along with that, but that doesn't mean that animals aren't communicating. So to spend all that much time defining what human language is and comparing it to how animals are communicating, I don't think is fair. And he even says it's not fair. So if it's not fair and why are you doing it, then why are you doing it? So anyway, that was my main objection to the book because he kept going back to that. And I suppose there are a lot of people that might like to just cogitate on those sorts of things. And so that's fine. But overall, I think it was an interesting book. I do enjoy reading books on other people's perspectives on particularly animals that I don't know that much about. But we're going to talk about animals that I do know a lot about. And the animal that I probably know the most about are dogs. And I do know a lot about cats. I've had many, many cats over the years, probably almost as many cats as dogs. And my first real pet was a cat when I was 10 years old, and I could have an actual pet aside from a goldfish, or I had guinea pigs, that kind of thing. But there's many different ways that animals communicate, including body language. But I'm wanting to just talk about the types of vocalizations that animals make. And of course, with dogs, the most obvious vocalization is barking. And I frequently get calls from people complaining that their dog is barking too much. And so, you know, on just the most obvious level, you would think that that's pretty self-explanatory, but it really isn't, because there are so many different reasons and so many different types of barking that if it's a problem because it's excessive, we need to figure out why and what is your dog doing when they're making these barking noises. So I was just going to go over a couple of those with you. So one type of barking is, I'm going to call it playful or greeting barking, excited barking. Somebody comes in, they see somebody they like or know, or they're anticipating that you're going to play with them, and they start barking and jumping around. And some of that, in my opinion, of course, all barking and sounds that dogs make are normal. It's, you know, something that dogs do. But as I say, if it becomes obsessive or too much, then you need to learn how to tamp it down a little bit. But I remember I had a caller many years ago, and they wanted to know if they could train their dog to play ball but not make any noise when they were playing ball. And I thought that would be very difficult, because if you were going to get your dog to stop barking when they were playing ball, most dogs would then think that you don't want them to have fun and get excited in the game, and they may not want to play ball at all. Now, I'm not going to say it would be impossible to do, but I don't think it would be worth your trouble. And that would be an example of why not just let your dog be a dog, and if part of their game is to bark, then let them do it. Now, if somebody comes to visit and they're just jumping and barking and attention seeking, and okay, that continues on. I think that's something that definitely, you know, is a training issue and something that we need to work on. But, you know, again, depending on the circumstance. So, for example, I have a dog who loves to play Frisbee. And if he thinks we're going to play Frisbee, he starts up, and he doesn't just bark. He makes weird sorts of noises. But, you know, that's part of his excitement. And if that's part of his enjoyment of playing Frisbee, I'm not going to even try to take it away from him. There's no point in that. But then there's also, oh, I'd say attention seeking. This is probably one that I run across a lot, where dogs will just come over to people and just start barking at them. And they're not being aggressive, but it's like, hey, I'm over here. I think you need to play with me, or give me a snack, or get up and do something. And sometimes I'm not even entirely convinced that the dog knows exactly what they want, although sometimes they do know exactly what they want. But it can get really out of hand and obnoxious. Now, in some cases, dogs will come up to people and bark, and they're indicating they need to go out or there's something specific going on. But I don't think I've ever met a dog like Lassie, where, you know, they're coming and they're barking because Timmy's in the well and something really serious is going on. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, but I'm saying for the most part, if a dog is doing that, they may be saying, would you please put some water in my water bowl? I have to go out. And that's a good thing. But if they're doing it because they're bored and they know they can get you to jump around and do things for them, you know, I've met people that get so caught up in, what does this dog want? What does this dog mean? I remember I met someone who had this little Bichon puppy, and every room in her house had literally a crystal bowl with water and food, and there were all these really fancy dog beds and dog toys and treats, and we had just gone out and taken the dog for a walk. And the dog did all of its business, and we got back in the house, And the little dog came up to her and started barking at her. And the woman was, what does the dog want? What does she need? And maybe this wasn't the best choice of words, but I said to her, who cares? I said, this dog has everything it could possibly want or need. And I don't think it needs anything. If it needs anything at all, it needs to settle down, which is going to be best accomplished by ignoring your dog and not getting all riled up. And that's something, too, that sometimes can happen, is that people can inadvertently reward behavior that is unsettling. The ability to self-regulate is something that children need to learn. It's also something dogs need to learn. And if every time they make a noise to try to get your attention and they realize that that gets you unnerved, now you can't self-regulate, then this becomes a vicious cycle. And that is something that I commonly work with, definitely a training issue. But as I say, if it's within reason and there's something legitimate that your dog is trying to say or wants, well, then fine. Then you're going to know what that is. But even there's a little bit of kind of shade of gray. So let's say, for example, you know, you're doing something really important. Maybe your dog has to go out. If your dog is a healthy, normal adult dog and they have to go out and they bark and they tell you, that's good. But can they wait a second? They should be able to wait a second here while you complete whatever task you need to be completing. And if it becomes maniacal and pushy, that's a whole nother matter. But for some reason or another, people seem to get very caught up in trying to figure out what every little vocalization means and what does the dog want and what do they need. People do this with their cats, too. What does he mean? What do they mean? What are they trying to say? And they may be trying to say something. I'm not saying that they're not, but I'm saying that if you start getting anxious and nervous and start wondering, oh my gosh, this is like some kind of major breakthrough in animal communication with my pet, it might not be. It might be your pet is having trouble settling down and is making a vocalization. You're reacting to it and it becomes like a whole, like a domino effect of craziness. And so attention-seeking barking can be reasonable, and it can be part of a game, and it can be fun, or it can, you know, be a communication. A lot of people want their dogs to bark at them, to tell them they have to go out, which when they do it and they're honest and not excessive, it can be great. But I often get the calls when it's not honest, because they really don't have to go out. They just like going in and out to get the attention. And it's excessive because they keep it up even after they've gotten whatever it is you think they want. So it's kind of a balance here. And part of it is, you know, what is your level of understanding of what's going on? What is your level of ability to regulate yourself and your pet? Because if you're letting your pet be the total creator of whatever the situation is, that's probably a mistake, just like it would be a mistake to let a child do that. Obviously, you want children and your pets to have some autonomy and express themselves and be happy. But a lot of times they're wrong. And, you know, some people are afraid to basically acknowledge that and then do something about it. So, you know, that's a whole category of vocalization, and there's different ways to deal with it depending on how excessive it is and et cetera, et cetera. So you have to narrow it down. Now, there's a lot of other types of vocalizations too, and we're going to talk a little bit about those when we come back after the break.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to Pet Talk on WTIC. You're listening to Lori Fass on this behavior edition of the show. Next week will be the medical edition with Dr. Andrea Dennis, and she'll be on 2 weeks in a row. So we had a little bit of a, you know, shift in schedule here. I run into John Matulis from Law Talk as I come in, because he is right before this show, and he said, "Weren't you here last week?" And I go, "Yep, I was here last week." So I do post on my website the dates that I'm going to be on. So if you want to know that, you can go to my website, LoriFastDogTraining.com. Go to the TIC website, the page. I have a link to the website for TIC on my website if you want to listen to podcasts of shows that were on previously. You can just hook up to that. Or if you want to know when I'm going to be on the air next, you can go look at it too. So anyway, that's my public service announcement on that one. So we're talking about vocalizations, and I was saying that I'm probably most expert in dog vocalizations because they're the animal that I have worked with the most. So I've owned personally a lot of dogs and cats, but just because of what I do, which is help people with whatever behavior problems they're having, and I've been doing this for many, many years, I've literally seen thousands of dogs over the years and listened to a lot of sounds and vocalizations. Sometimes it's very obvious to me anyway, because if you hear something over and over again, it becomes obvious, but there is enough deviation where things that might sound like they're stressful are really not. They're more like a fake sort of a sound. I remember I was working with some college kids who had a very large Alaskan Malamute, and he was, you know, well over 100 pounds, and he was a big doofball, and he wanted to pull and do what he wanted to do, and he was very spoiled. And one of the things that he would do is, aside from pulling, was flip himself on the ground and make all these crazy sounds as though, you know, somebody was torturing him. And these young women that were taking care of him didn't know what to make of it. And I said, he's just, you know, he's just pulling your leg. There's nothing wrong with him. You need to just get him up and keep moving. And so he quickly realized that that wasn't going to work for them. And he got over it. And it was just very melodramatic and silly. But what I thought was kind of funny was he was smart enough to understand that he could embarrass them if he did this in front of other people who wouldn't know that he was just a drama king. So they lived near Syracuse University, and they were walking down the street with him, and I was there with them. We were doing a lesson, and he quite predictably waited for this group of about five people to get close enough that they could see and hear what he was doing. And as soon as that happened, he flipped himself on the ground and started doing the screaming thing. And of course, these people seeing this, they were appalled, wondering what these women were doing to this poor dog. They weren't doing anything. They were just walking down the street. And so they had to embarrass themselves further by insisting that he get up and just come along. And, you know, he did snap out of it. But I thought that was, you know, not only was he a big faker to them, and he also realized that he could embarrass them and that he could maybe pull it off if other people were there. So, you know, I guess kudos for him for being smart, but he's kind of an example of when people say that smart dogs are easy to train. No, not necessarily, because sometimes they're like evil geniuses trying to figure out sneaky ways to get away with things. So, but that having been said, one of the types of vocalizations that dogs will make is if they are in distress or if they are upset by something. And this is often the case when people are trying to train their dog to be alone or train their dog to accept a crate so that they can help with the housebreaking and avoid issues of destructiveness and that kind of thing. And so, it is not uncommon for people to call me and tell me that they're having this particular type of problem. And one of the things that I will tell people to do is put their dog in the crate while we're talking on the phone so I can hear what it sounds like. Because, again, I've been around enough dogs that I can tell if they're really upset or if they're making a noise that really more signifies, hey, let me out of here. You made a mistake. What's wrong with you? You're just a stupid person. Let me out. I don't like it. As opposed to, oh my gosh, I'm really upset. I'm really scared. Because if it's, I'm really upset, I'm really scared, we're going to handle it differently than if it's, hey, I don't like this. Let me out of here. And unfortunately, people frequently have trouble distinguishing between those two things. And one of the things that is really interesting is that dogs, and I think all animals, are very good at picking up how much they're getting you upset. And if they're getting you upset, it really is like a trigger for them to keep doing whatever it is they're doing. So an example would be I was working with someone who had a little Yorkshire Terrier puppy, and they were training the dog to stay alone in a pretty good size pen, and they were paper training or using pee pads in this case. And, you know, if you can't watch the puppy needs to be in a safe spot where, you know, we can put the pee pads down so it's not just randomly going all over the house. And I had taken this little dog to stay with me for a little while. And I didn't have any trouble putting the dog in the pen. It was fine. It settled in immediately. And so I had scheduled an appointment to go out to see what the problem was, because I was hearing that this dog, when she put the dog in the pen, was crying and pitifully, and it was really horrible. And so I said, okay, well, you know, just like I explained to you, if I hear or see what a dog is doing, I can get a better grasp on what the situation is. So that was so funny, because don't forget, this is a dog who knew me. This is a dog that I had taken in and worked with. So we take the puppy, put the puppy in the pen. Puppy sees me, goes in the pen. We walk away, and the dog makes no sounds at all, not even a peep. And it was because I was there being supportive of her. The dog knew I wasn't going to react to it, and so it was a total ruse. And that's how smart animals can be, just letting you know. But so in any case, we do have a caller, so let's see what we can do here. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Well, I have three cats, and this new cat that moved in with me last fall, my oldest cat is still really stressed out, like hates him, attacks him, doesn't want, and he actually picks a lot of fights with us.
Okay.
The new cat is much younger and stronger and everything, so he learned immediately, you know, to kind of stay away from him. But I was wondering if there's anything I can do.
Okay, well, let's try to figure out, first of all, you know, when you're saying they're fighting, can you describe exactly what's happening?
Yes. If the new cat comes in and my other cat's there, he will instantly, like, attack him.
Okay, but what, I mean, when you say attack can mean now we have to go to the vet and we've got to put a drain in there and there's the ear ripped off and, you know, or it could be a couple of tufts of fur maybe came out, or it could be nothing. It could be just a lot of vocalization.
Well, I usually break it up, but normally the fights have gotten less. Initially, I thought that's what it's going to be, a vet bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're getting used to each other to the point where they can actually lie right next to each other.
Okay, so nobody is actually getting hurt.
No.
Okay, because that's important.
It is, but, you know, the new cat has really stressed my older cat out.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you a weird question, okay? You ready? How stressed out are you about the situation?
Because, you know, cats just do what they want. So they're not like dogs where you can train them like people to act like a monkey. Cats are different.
You can train a dog to act like a person to act like a monkey? Okay.
Sure. But cats, right. You can't do that with. Cats are... They do their own thing.
Well, like, I mean, okay, all right, that. But I guess my question is, when this happens, your older cat, if you're worried and you're really stressed out and you're having a hard time with this, That's going to make your older cat more stressed out too, which is one of the things that I was just talking about before I talked to you. And, you know, a lot of times people describe fights, and I would not even call it a fight. I'd call it more like a squabble because nobody's getting hurt.
Yeah. Anymore.
Okay. So it used to be that they were getting hurt?
Yes.
Okay. And
blood, you know, not hurt, but, you know. And no. If the cats were the same age, I would enjoy the fight. Okay, but one is 13, and one I don't know because he just moved in last fall.
Okay, well, you know, I think that, you know, you told me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you told me that over time it's gotten better.
It has, yes.
Okay, so I think sometimes things just take time, and the fact that the younger cat is not retaliating
anymore
is good. Okay.
But, you know, he still will defend himself a little, but it's not like the knockdown dragouts that it was. You know?
Right. So the younger cat is getting over it, getting used to it. But, you know, I mean, all right, I have just giving you example here. Okay. I have a cat who, you know, she can do kind of snotty cat things. And one of the things she likes to do is sit up on high pieces of furniture and whack my dogs. Well, my youngest dog thinks that's okay, and he'll even turn it into a game and then hop around and chase her. And my oldest dog, he does not. Like, it makes him really, really mad, and he takes it to heart, and he snaps and growls at her. And I don't think he'd take it too far, but she keeps doing it to him, and he keeps getting mad about it, but it's not to a level of, like, I'm worried about anybody getting hurt. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I think sometimes as time goes on, things work out to a point where, okay, they have these little squabbles. Squabbles aren't, like, that's what I would describe as going on between my oldest dog and my cat. It's a squabble. Yeah. Nobody's going to get hurt.
That's what's happening with my cats right now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I will say to my dog that he's a good boy and don't worry about it. And I'll tell my cat off and tell her not to do it. And she sort of acts like she doesn't know what I'm talking about, but she does. and sometimes I'll even take a back scratcher and give her a little poke and move her out of the way.
Yeah.
And tell her, just don't do that. You know, cut it out. Yeah. What are you doing? Okay. So if your older cat is just starting up stuff for no reason at all, you can even give him a little poke and say, hey, don't do that.
What happened was this cat was hanging around my house for months afterwards. And I believe he might have been abandoned or he may still have another home. But he was fighting with my other two cats before he moved in, and I never had I was spraying him with a water hose, and because he was, you know, cats don't necessarily become love at first sight kind of people.
Yeah, you know what, Dennis, I'm sure I've spoken to you before, but let me ask you a question. I do need to go to a break, so I can either talk to you some other time, or I can put you on hold. You want to be on hold?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, sure. Well, we're gonna put you on hold.
And okay, thanks, Laura.
Go to a break. Hello, and welcome back to Pet Talk on WTIC. You're listening to the Behavior Edition today with Lori Fass, and next week will be Dr. Andrea Dennis from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital. So you can get your medical questions squared away for next week. And we were talking to Dennis, who has three cats, and he's on hold, so we'll see if we can get him back on the air. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Okay, just making sure I'm pushing the right buttons over here. Okay, so I remember one of the times that I talked to you, I had suggested that you try rescue remedy. Now, did you look into that at all?
I have not.
And, oh, bad, Dennis. Bad. Yeah, I would try that. I mean, the rescue remedy is, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's a combination of Bach flower remedies. And there's rescue remedy for humans, which is generally in a medium of alcohol. And the ones that they make for pets are in a medium of glycerin. And it's for dogs or for cats. And it's readily available. You could get it from Amazon. You could get it from Chewy. And it does tend to take the edge off of things. So if you were going to be using it, you would maybe you could give it every couple hours, something like that. But I would try it, you know, because your question was, what are you going to do to get your older cat to be more calm? So that's one thing. And then I remember that we had talked about catnip a little bit. And so do your cats like catnip?
They love it, but you know, all three of them are angry drunks. So, you know, okay, it starts off great, then it's the World War III, and then everybody's crashed out.
Okay,
so it's similar to alcohol with people. Some
okay,
people.
Well, cats also can have CBD oil.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, so you know, you can you could try that, and then. Just as an activity of something that they can do, did you ever hear of something called silver vine?
No.
Okay. Well, it's basically a little stick, and it has kind of an interesting aroma for cats, and it's something that cats often like to chew on.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know if your cats are into being chewers. I've had cats that are chewers, and they'll chew wires.
They're more of the scratchers.
They're more like scratchers. Well, you could try it. You could try it and see. You never know. I mean, there are certain animals that like certain things and not other things. The worst that'll happen is you'll buy a bunch of sticks that they don't like and you have to give it to somebody else. But I guess the idea is to give them other activities and other things to think about. So the other question is, do your cats like boxes?
Oh, yeah, they love boxes, yeah. We
okay.
just got rid of some boxes.
Okay, so you might want to consider the idea of getting some boxes, just even, you know, cup holes, but just activities. You know, we're going to give you some activities and things to play with.
Well, they all go outside, too. They're indoor-outdoor pets, so they all go outside. The older one has not been going out so much just because he doesn't like the cold. The other two are unaffected by it. But.
Okay. All right. Well, he's probably had situations outside where he's stuck out there, and he's happy to not be stuck out there. So he's a little...
Well, yeah. And like I said, he was abandoned when he was 1 year old. That's when I got him. My neighbors moved away, took their indoor cats, and left him.
So the other question is what kind of routine do you have? Do you have, like, mealtime is now and playtime is now and we do this and we do that? Do you have anything like that?
Well, we really don't have a routine. Last year, on January 9th, I was diagnosed with stage 4 rectal cancer and told I had 2 weeks to live and there was nothing they could do for me to go home and get my affairs in order.
Oh, my goodness.
So instead of doing that, I went doctor shopping, thankfully, and found this great guy, Timothy Hong, who actually saved my life. So
wow.
I went through like 10 months of chemotherapy and radiation, and unfortunately that didn't work. But they were able to shrink my tumor down to enough to where a panel of 12 doctors could vote on me getting surgery. And 12 guys unanimously voted. And so I had surgery on November 6th. So for the past year, we've had no schedule just because I'm home all day and all night.
Well, okay, so I'm just, you know, I'm going to have to talk fast because we've got about 1 minute.
If they want to eat at 2 a.m., they eat at 2 a.m., you know.
Okay, well, I'm just saying to you that if you provide them with a schedule, that one of the things that is stress reducing for, you know, little children, dogs, cats, is if you have a schedule, a routine. And you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So you.
I don't know whether it's November or January.
Okay. Well, that might be a goal for everybody.
I don't have a routine anymore.
Well, anyway, I'm talking fast and trying. I don't want to cut you off, but I'm going to be cut off in about 40 seconds here. So I just want you to give some thought to coming up with a routine, you know, and because routines are stress reducing. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your question was, what can I do to reduce stress in my older cat? Okay. So I'm telling you things that I think my
routine is,
routine is one of the things on the list. Okay. So, you know, I say rescue remedy, we'll take catnip off a list because they get all crazy. Yeah. You could try
when they're individually, when one guy's in and the other two are out, they get it.
Okay, so, and then maybe boxes, but you could have, okay, you know, 2 o'clock is recreation time. We're going to play with a toy. And then that's the end of the show, Dennis. I got to go.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Okay.
Have a nice weekend.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.